Welcome back to Arts About.
It's a show about art, Sally. It's a work of art in itself, I reckon.
It is a work of art in itself. And it's just you and me on the board today, John.
Yeah, it's happened before.
It has. Yeah. Mark's not here, but I suspect we're going to ring him a bit later, aren't we?
I think we'll get him on the phone, yeah.
Yeah, good. Arts About is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio. And you're listening to me, Sally Bailiu, and Artist in Residence and Cultural Sounding Board, John Baird, as always, on the panel. What have you got for us this week, John?
Dancing in the desert.
Now, that's something I like to do.
Yeah, in the Middle Eastern desert, in fact, in 1981, my younger brother Andrew and I.
Oh, it's another Baird tale, another Baird brothers tale. Fantastic. I look forward to that. And, of course, we don't know what Mark's bringing us this week for his fabulous new segment, aptly aimed.
He suggested that he might be talking about a show he saw at Fed Square from an artist whose name I've just completely forgotten.
Okay, but somebody with a...
But also Lord Melbourne and the town Melbourne, so the connection between the two.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, well, that's what we've got coming up a little bit later on. I've had a very busy week this week. I went and saw Swan Lake last Friday. And then I visited Swell at the Forts and Tunnels of Point Nepean.
Yeah, I nearly nicked down there.
I tell you what, John, you bloody well should have. Excuse my language. It was terrific. It was really, really good. It's the beginnings of something I hope will continue down there. There were some really remarkable things. Audio quality, incredible. Five different stages, and they just had really different things. On the half hour for 15 minutes, you might go and have a didgeridoo played all over your body. That was pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. By Lionel Louch, who's a local didgeridoo and player and healer. Marty Nelson-Williams.
I'm just trying to figure out whether or not I would actually put up with that, having a didgeridoo played all over my body.
I tell you what, it was like massage.
Yeah, well, it may be, but, you know, I'm not ready for it.
Oh, I don't know about that, John. I reckon you might actually really like it. Anyway, it was a terrific thing, and I'd really like to get Janine Willis back in perhaps over the next couple of weeks to talk about how it all went and where it's going next.
People?
Yeah, they were, but and just enough for it to be still feel really intimate. It was fabulous.
All vibrating from having the didgeridoo.
Yeah, but in those incredible places down at Point Nepean, it was brilliant. Okay, so on top of that, we are going to have Carly Greer. She's coming in from Brightspace, friend of the show, and she's going to be talking about the book Photo by Michael Cantor that was launched there last week. That's going to be very interesting. And also Heather Forbes-McKeon, who's coming in, and she, along with Ian Coffey, are creating a regular forum for local poets to get together in Macrae. So, before we hear from her, I thought I'd get you in the mood with a little other poetry. This is George Mpanga, or known as George... Oh, that's not him. George the Poet. He's a London-born performer of Ugandan heritage. He's better known by his stage name, George the Poet. He's a spoken word poet and a rapper with an interest in social and political issues. His innovative brand of musical poetry has won him critical acclaim, both as a recording artist and a social commenter. He connects his listeners with organisations around the world tackling the issues addressed in his poetry. So here he is with a piece called Search Party. For our next guest, poetry is a passion. Heather Forbes-McKeon has decided to create a regular forum for poets to create their work and be inspired by other poets in a convivial setting in Macrae. Former head of drama at Frankston High School, Heather is in here with us in the studio this morning to talk about it and to encourage any of you out there, would-be poets or lyricists, to join her and Ian Coffey in a venture that will hopefully unleash a stream of local expression. Good morning, Heather. Welcome to Arts About.
Thank you, Sally. Thank you, John. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Are you a poet?
I've been asking myself that question because I see myself far more as a playwright, but I do love poetry, and then I thought I better get all of my poetry together that I've written, and I think I've discovered perhaps I am.
Fantastic.
If I ever meet poets, I always offer them my sympathy.
It's nice of you, John.
Yes.
So what is it about poetry then that does float your boat?
I think it's something that we all turn to when we need to express our inner feelings or perhaps tell a story. And I'm probably a storyteller because I've been a drama teacher
perhaps
half my life. And but I also have done my Masters of Arts in Writing and Literature, and I did a poetry unit, and I so wanted to do that unit, and they kept cancelling it, and I hung in there, and finally they did offer it, and I absolutely loved it. So, yeah, and I've written poetry since I was a teenager, you know, that teen angst poetry. Yes.
Well, it's a beautiful way to cathart, isn't it,
yes,
poetry?
Yes, yeah. And, you know, and when I've done eulogies at my parents' funerals, I've used poetry and found that it's just such a great way to express those feelings. And you'll hear a lot tomorrow on Anzac Day too for that very reason. Yes. And I love metaphor, and I use that, I love magical realism as a writer in my play writing and with my students. So I find that metaphor is extremely powerful, and that poetry is a great, you know, most forms of poetry anyway, except perhaps ballad, but you tap into that symbolism.
Mm. Yeah. Now, you and I initially met at that fabulous A Woman's Place Arts Festival created at SPAC by Carol Pacciullo and Anthea McKenzie. And we met at the writing workshop that local poet Andrea Louise Thomas facilitated. I was amazed, actually, at the work that she elicited from the group of women that were there, particularly the young girls, you know, like yes. How brave they were and open-hearted. That was really quite exciting to see.
Yeah, that's right. I think you're either into it or you're not into it. Mm. Now, some people I've said, would you like to come to Poets Corner? And I can just see that, oh, I'm busy.
Yeah.
Some people are just not into language like some of us are and expressing ourselves.
Yes.
So if you were there, you were there for that reason. And I think everyone got a lot out of it, actually. It was really, really excellent.
Yes, it certainly was. Yeah. It can be a bit soul-bearing, and I guess in that respect then it is a little bit intimidating.
Yes,
it
exactly.
Can be.
Yes, you can feel very vulnerable. In fact, we've got a Facebook page, and I think we've now got about 80 or so followers, and it took... For some people it was immediate. They quickly put their poetry up on it. It took me about a week to feel I could do that. And but it's just great to see so many people doing that, you know, just feeling they can. They feel comfortable about doing that, safe, I suppose.
Does the Facebook page put a bit of a condom on the power of a poem, do you think? Is it? I just think of poetry
perhaps,
as the paper and the ink,
yes.
You know, the...
Perhaps it does, yes. I've certainly vetted what I'll put up there, most right. definitely. But it's a group page, and I've made it an open group. At some point, perhaps we might all agree, let's have a closed group so not everyone can see what we've put up here. I'm just trying to get members, so I've made it open.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But, you know, there might be people you don't want to have those people see. I mean, you know, if you've had times in your life where you've turned to poetry, You. That's very close to...
It's private.
Your,
it can
yeah,
be private.
It's
yes.
very intimate. And so I've certainly felt... Look, perhaps some of it I will actually read at Poets Corner, but I don't feel I want to put it out there on the internet.
So tell us about Poets Corner.
Yeah.
What is it?
Yeah,
what's
okay.
it going to be?
So for a number of years I've had this idea where I'd like to have... And perhaps I'm a bit of a child of the 60s as well. And I remember in the 70s, you might remember this, there was the Green Man in Malvern. Did you ever go there?
Yeah,
no, I do. It rings a bell, though.
Yeah, it was a folk music cafe. Yeah. And sometimes I'd read poetry as well. And so I've had this idea probably ever since then that I'd love to have this sort of folksy feel happening in a cafe bar. And I frequent the Blue Bay Cafe in Macrae. And so now Heather Miles has got it as a bar. So it's open in the evening. And that's when I thought, you know, Poets Corner, it's on a corner.
Yes.
And she's really open to it and really excited about it. And I just, well, I approached Ian because Ian's a literature teacher that we know. My husband's known Ian and his wife for nearly 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that he'd been a literature teacher. And I just said to him, I'd love to have this idea happen. And he said, oh, I'd be into it. So we've just started. It's only been a month. And it happened at Moth at that weekend where I saw you.
The women's place. Women's
yeah, the
place
night
day.
Before the
yes.
women's place activities. Mm-hmm. We happened to be sitting next to Ian and Deb, and then they looked up and went, oh, Heather, Simon.
Fabulous.
It's just funny, and we got talking, and that's when the idea hatched.
So what is it? It's every month?
Every month,
yes.
Sunday evening, 6:30 until 8 o'clock, and we've got a set menu for $26, so you'll get a main and a dessert. But we've just changed a little bit and offered the $10 cover charge if you don't want to eat anything and you might just like a drink or have nothing.
And this is at the
Blue Bay Cafe.
Blue Bay Cafe.
Corner of Beverly Road and Point Nepean Road, Macrae.
And you operate that as a kind of an open mic poetry thing?
We don't know what we're going to do, John. It's going to be very interesting.
We're
just really open at this stage. Being a teacher, I put forward to Ian a structure. And then we've said, you know what, that's very teacherish. Let's just keep it open and just see what happens. Yeah. I have never been to one of these poetry slams that happens in Melbourne. I might get to one next Saturday if I can. I'm seeing a play in the afternoon.
Is there one this next Saturday?
Yeah, the Dan O'Connell
that
Hotel.
That would have been yesterday, yes.
Yeah, they have it every Saturday. They don't have it. It doesn't cost anything to go. It's a pub. It's 2 till 5. And I'd say that it's pretty raucous from what I've heard. People call out. Clap hands, and I think that sounds wonderful.
And
I'd
there
like
are
it to be
definitely
like that.
Poets out there who need an audience.
Yes.
And it's a very vocal sort of performance, and the audience is an important part of what they're doing with their lives, so that's why those things operate.
Yeah.
And they might even come down to Macrae, who knows?
Yes, that's right. So, yeah.
So just so I think you've asked on your Facebook page for anybody who's interested to present their work to contact you beforehand,
yes,
is that correct?
To email us or to phone the Blue Bay Cafe.
Yep.
So we've got an email address, and that's poetscornergathering@gmail.com. Or you can ring the cafe at 59820295. And we'd like to know if you're going to, when you make a booking for the dinner or for the $10 cover charge, whatever it is, to let us know what poems you're reading and perhaps what the titles are. But we can take that information on the night.
Absolutely.
Some
and of course, you've got the Facebook page, which is Poets Corner.
Poets Corner.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think there's more than one Poets Corner. Ours doesn't have an apostrophe. It's been some... I just said, let's keep it simple, no apostrophe. And that was a good decision because there are other Poets Corner Facebook group pages with, you know, apostrophes.
Yes, okay. So your Poets Plural Corner.
Poets
That's fabulous.
Corner. Yeah.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on to the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Poets Corner, it's the second one is the last Sunday of every month, beginning Sunday, 30th of April.
That's correct.
Thank you so much, Heather McKean.
Hope to see you there with your
poetry. McKean, to talk to us today. And here's a little bit of Michelle Schacht with When I Grow Up while we get our next guest into the studio.
Thanks, Heather.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bright Space in St Kilda owes its presence to the inspiration of Martin Cantor, photographer, social environmentalist, activist, philanthropist and champion of the Melbourne artists he loved so much and who he saw as having a very hard time at the hands of many gallery owners. Bright Space used to be an old rug factory in St Kilda before Martin converted it into a gallery. Sadly, Martin passed away this year and a book chronicling some of his work as a photographer has just been launched at Bright Space Gallery. Friend of the show, Carly Greer, was and still is its manager, and she joins us this morning with her partner, guitarist extraordinaire Charlie Owen, to talk about the book that's just been launched at the gallery relating Martin's extraordinary body of photographic work and the life of a man she clearly admires and who has contributed so much. Good morning, Carly and Charlie. Welcome to Arts About.
Good morning, Sally.
Welcome, both of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Sally, for that introduction. And yes, we have just launched Photo by Martin Cantor, which is there's 90 photographs of Martin's in there that we chose to especially showcase his beautiful work that he did from about 1978 through to the most recent work that we put in the book was 2002.
Mm.
Yeah.
And most of it being portraiture, which was his focus, capturing a spirit of Melbourne over a certain period, which was, I suppose, the late 70s through to the late 80s.
He was particularly fond of painters, I think, wasn't he?
Particularly fond of painters. And so there's a large proportion of it is capturing portraiture of painters, which...
Or artists.
Artists,
And I think you would have been a subject of his, perhaps, at times. Would you, Mark?
We used some of his photos, Charlie? On one CD, the second Text on Charlie CD. He took some photos of us up in... because he also had a house, apart from being involved with the peninsula, he also lived in the northern New South Wales, so we would have been up there. But it's a particularly interesting view of portraiture that he had, capturing artists, because in some ways you've sort of referenced their art as well.
Yeah, and I think what he did with the artist, he despised that photograph of the artist in front of their painting. Mm. So he would take the artist, he would badger the journalist who was writing the story and say, what is this about? You know, who is this artist? How can we get inside this artist? And then he would take them out of the studio, take them to somewhere that was completely, in a way, maybe irrelevant to their work, but he would then capture them in a way that then that photograph became the new work. And his portrait of Jenny Holzer, an American artist, is stunning. His portrait of Charles Burns, another American artist, is amazing.
I have to say, Adam Cullen with a dead cat around his neck.
Adam Cullen. That is really
Who's the
really
artist
incredible.
Holding the fish up on a fishing trip?
Peter Tindall.
Yeah.
So that was, I mean, those portraits that he did predominantly with Ashley Crawford for World Art are really amazing. But also his rock photography, just the way he, I don't know how he did it, but the way he used the available light, how he set his camera is just incredible, because there are amazing shots of Iggy Pop.
That shot of Iggy Pop bending backwards on stage is just wild.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It really is one that I would hope that Iggy might see one day and love it, because I think it is just an amazing photograph. And Grace Jones holding this trombone. And just, I'm like, how did he get down in that position to take this photo of Grace Jones? Because it's like it's a studio setup, but it's not. It's a live one. And there's another photo too of Marky Smith. And I was told the other day by Martin's son Heath that Marky Smith didn't like his photo being taken. And so in this photo of Marky Smith, he looks really growly and kind of like really sexy and growly. And I'm like, he wasn't happy about his photo being taken. And that's why it's this really quite outrageous photo. But if you look up Marky Smith, you can't find any photos of him as a young man on the internet.
Really?
Yeah, so it's an incredible shot.
So Martin, was an incredible man. He had his fingers in lots of different pies. He comes from a family, obviously, with deep financial roots, but also a very philanthropic family. His mother, Anne Cantor, who was daughter of Dame Elizabeth Murdoch, and sister to Rupert. How did this very privileged and Melbourne establishment position affect Martin's view of the world, do you think?
Well, I think Richard Gilliatt talks about it in his text for the book. There's 10,000 words in the book, so there's a lot to be able to grab hold of there. But he says that, you know, Martin went to work at the Australian with two problems. One, he had Rupert as an uncle, and the other one, he wanted to be a really great photographer. And they were, you know, it was an issue. And
opposing
he
didn't, ideas.
Yeah, like that. It was. So I guess he, you know, he fought. There's a story in the book about how he didn't like the way Rupert treated people, and he stormed out of a big dinner one night and, you know, threw his hands up in the air. This is Martin. So he had difficulties with that.
I think part of this proposition is that it's why Martin gravitated towards the artists like the Raw Group, people and musicians and music in general that was left of centre. He was kind of battling his own internal demon about this juxtaposition, that where he wanted to be involved with the arts and the cutting edge side of things, yet the seemingly position of privilege was sort of at odds with that. And it's what really, and he became great, he was great friends with a lot of the artists from and musicians from that sort of almost the underbelly of the arts. And when I first met him a long time ago, I didn't know anything about he didn't wear the badge of Murdoch on his sleeve at all. In fact, he had a crappy old car. I had no idea when I first met him. I moved to Melbourne in 91 or something and met him probably 92, 93 through a band called the Working Class Ringos. And I don't think he was taking photos, but he was just hanging around at pubs with us and seemed like a great guy and loved music, and we all became friends. And it wasn't until many years later that Morris told me, you know, Martin's, where he's from? I said, no.
He had a really heightened sense of social justice and
absolutely.
I think he was a great donator to all sorts of things like a drug rehabilitation centre and but also environmental issues, Rainforest Foundation and so on.
He bought a big swathe of land up near his house near Mullumbimby to protect it from and cleared it from clearing. He was trying to clear the camp for laurels from the area and to protect this area because he thought it was just so beautiful and needed protected, and it was near perhaps where development could start.
Mm. He also tried to stop a Woolworths going ahead in Mullumbimby. And
he had a lot of support on that one, I would have thought.
He worked on that for years, and he was, they took out advertisements and really did a strong campaign to try and stop this Woolworths. Yeah, he was a great social campaigner and really fun. He took a fun approach to things, and I guess that, that was great.
As a sort of an aside, I met Martin's cousin, Lockie Murdoch, at a party, and I said to him, "You're a tycoon and I'm an artist and you should give me some money."
And nice direct approach, John, yeah.
And he said to me, I thought rather elegantly, he said, "Look, I put a lot of money into the arts, but I put it into a pipeline and you're at the wrong end."
Brilliant. Okay, fair enough.
Well, I mean, that was the thing with Martin. He did support a lot of artists, and he would do it in a way by going out and buying a painting. He would, he would say, "I'm going to," he would buy a painting, and I think that that was great.
So he started Brightspace. Brightspace came out of an idea of his that artists were being very badly done by.
He just thought that, we should give them a better go. And he, there was just a few of his artist friends that he felt had been done wrongly by. And he thought, let's start something, that was a bit more socially...
And as a gallery more fitting into the way he viewed the world, and instead of being a gallery, a pointy-headed gallery, for want of a better, he wanted to be very social and open and like a venue, like an arts venue. So it wasn't just about buying art, it was about supporting art.
Mm. And so, it's a wonderful thing then that you've been able to do, which is to compile all these images, and there's an exhibition that is associated with the launch of this book that's at Brightspace, isn't there?
Yep. So all of the photos, I think, bar a couple, are in the exhibition. I've used some of the Martin Silver Gelatin prints, and they've all been framed, and they're not for sale, but there are a few works that are for sale where we've done posthumous C-type prints of them. So it's really great. And there's also an exhibition to accompany this exhibition, which is art by subjects. So because there are about 40 artists in the show, we have found curated works by their subjects. So there's a Howard Arkley in there from 1984. There's a David Lowell from 1984.
There's a Merkamora.
There's everyone who is a subject in the the book has a piece of work in the space. So
there's even a Nick Cave.
There's a Nick Cave.
Really? Yeah. Well, this exhibition is on at Brightspace, and of course you can buy the book there, Photo by Martin Cantor. Thank you so much for coming into the show today. Brightspace is, of course, at 8 Martin Street in St Kilda, and the exhibition runs until?
The 13th of May.
Thank you so much for coming in, Carly Greer and Charlie Owen. Thanks, to you today.
And now it's time for John on.
Dancing in the desert, John.
My brother Andrew and I nicked off overseas when we were quite young. 1981. Have you got any idea how long ago that was, Sally?
I was having a great time in 1981, but it was a very long time ago.
Anyway, we nicked off overseas, and we knocked around Europe a bit, and then we ended up in Cairo. And Cairo's fantastic.
I would love to go to Cairo.
Cairo is a fantastic place. And it was certainly a fantastic place at the time, and we felt very comfortable there. And but it's one of those, we didn't know anything about it, and we were having a very good look around, and we met some young fellas in a cafe. Everyone drinks tea there. And we all had some tea together. And they said, look, we're going to a party tonight. Why don't you come along with us and you can meet some Egyptians, you know?
Real Egyptians.
Yeah. Yeah. And we said, all right, that'll be good. And they said, we'll meet you back here at, you know, whatever time it was. And we went back there, and sure enough, there they were, and they had this great big luxurious Mercedes-Benz. And we got in the back seat of that, and we took off, and Cairo just kind of finishes suddenly.
It's just desert.
Well, gravelly kind of undulating hills, you know, and suddenly we're in the back of this car driving through the desert. And the moon's coming up and the sun's going down, and we're with three young Arabs who we didn't know and kind of looking at each other occasionally going, I hope this is all right. about 2.5 hours into the desert.
Just, oh, my goodness, a long way out.
Yeah, just kept driving and driving and driving, kept getting darker. It was a full moon. They didn't turn the headlights on.
It was
kind of beautiful, but it was a little bit
weird.
Alarming.
Yeah.
But eventually we came to a like a town, like a small town, and there were like quite a lot of luxury cars there, you know, Jags and Mercedes and Audis. And
it's really incongruous.
A lot of Range Rovers. Mm. And I looked at the Range Rovers and thought, no, yeah, that makes sense, you know, given there's no roads.
Mm.
They're driving around in Range Rovers. And we walked into this town, and in the main square they'd set it up with lots of rugs around and cushions, rugs mm-hmm. and cushions, and a big main kind of rug in the middle. And we sat down on the cushions as invited, and quite comfortable there. We'd been to Carlton after all.
You know,
right. We knew how to sit on a cushion on a rug. And there was a little bit of hashish in the air, but not really being sort of promoted as what was going on. One of these young blokes ran off, and he came back, and they had a bottle of arak,
mm-hmm.
and they offered that to us.
Which is a pastiche. It's a aniseed flavored drink. Yes,
exactly.
I've had that. Yeah.
And a couple of tea glasses, and because they didn't drink, of course, but they were quite happy for us to have a drink. And we had a couple of glasses of that, and then the band started. There was a band.
Oh,
and
John, I wish I was there. This just sounds heaven to me.
And it was one of those kind of squeaky Middle Eastern bands with their flutes and a couple of little sort of drum kit sort of stuff.
Mm.
I don't know the names of any of the instruments, but you'd recognise the music from the beginning of American war movies about the Middle East, you know, that sort of sound. And the band started, and the men started getting up one after the other and dancing on the big main rug in the centre of the square. And they had this big stick that they'd dance with. And every time a man danced, he would hand the stick on to another man.
Oh, it's like the conch shell, only in dancing terms.
And every time the stick was handed over, there was an utterance of approval from the black scene over on the other side of the square, which was the women, which I hadn't noticed when I'd sat down, who were all over there, and they're all completely dressed in black. And I just hadn't noticed them at all, but there was a me every time one of the men handed the stick over to another man. And this dancing kept going until one of the men handed my brother Andrew the stick. And I said, "You right with this?" And he said, "Well, as far as I can tell, it's just hippie dancing." So he got out there and had a go at the hippie dancing with
Brilliant.
The stick. And the black crowd went mad.
Did they?
They loved it. You know, they just
go Drew.
Well, he's a very good looking young man.
Yeah. Must have been rather spectacular in those days.
And they absolutely loved it. In the morning, because we stayed there, they gave us a bed to sleep in a little house. And we stayed there, and in the morning we got up and everyone was there, and the young fellas we'd gone to the party with said, "All right, well, we'll run you back into Cairo." And we went back into Cairo, this time along the road.
Wow.
Which there was. It was a bitumen road back into Cairo.
Oh, but you just come out the other way.
I don't know why they took us across the desert on the way out. They might have been trying to freak us out.
Yeah.
But the point being for me is that there was a fantastic cultural exchange that went on, very subtle and not organised in any way at all. And the sort of thing that makes a human life really valuable.
Yeah, that's right.
And the sort of thing that would be very difficult to do these days, rather unfortunately.
Yes, I think if travelling to Egypt would be rather...
Well, especially just jumping in a car and driving off. I don't think you could do it.
Well, you might not.
You might not be at risk at all.
No, that's right. But then again, we've had a lot of fear put in us now.
Yeah.
Makes it harder. Mm. Amazing story. I wish I'd been there, John.
Mm.
Now, just up, we're going to play a little bit of Ryan Downey. I've played him on the show before. He's a Melbourne indie pop artist with the most extraordinary voice. This is actually from an earlier time. It's called The One, and it's rather beautiful. I think it's Venus Music, I think this is. Now, with any luck, we've actually got Mark on the line. Are you there, Mark?
I'm here.
Oh, fantastic. It's time for That's Amazing, I Never Knew That, with Mark Stewart. Oh, you are?
Morning, Sally. Morning, John.
Good morning, Mark. There's a bit of static going on there. Are you in a science lab of some sort with lightning bolts coming out your ears?
Not quite. I'm in an undisclosed location in Hunts Road. So it's a bit of
Yes, that undisclosed location.
So how did you go in Cairo?
Well, you'll have to, when you get a chance, listen to that story.
I will, John.
Mark's very fond of Cairo, Sally.
Is he?
Yeah.
I've never been to Cairo. I'd very much like to try it, though.
Well, what you do is you wait for the next terrorist attack and then you go immediately
afterwards. Yes, exactly.
But hopefully it won't be any more.
Sally has, in fact, though, been hitchhiking up the Syrian-Turkish border.
Yes, indeed, I have. I've adventured in many other places, but Cairo isn't one of them.
I'm sure you didn't have to wait too long for a ride.
No. Hey, what have you got for us this week?
Well, listen, I'm starting with the Patrick Pound exhibition at Fed Square, which is called The Great Exhibition. Patrick Pound is an avid collector who says, collect is to gather your thoughts through things.
Right.
And there are a lot of things, a lot of photos, a lot of different objects which he's collected over his life, and it's actually quite a good exhibition, so definitely worth seeing. And then there's that Akka.
Kaka. Was that intentional, Mark?
Never. Claire Lamb, no connection to William Lamb, Lord Melbourne, an English artist living in Melbourne who creates intimate and intense psychological spaces in an ambitious attempt to describe the human condition in its cruel reality and horrifying glory.
Ooh.
This is curator language for a couple of chairs, the mirrors and a video, none of which seem to have any significance, but I could be wrong.
Okay, then.
So, moving on to William Lamb, the second Viscount of Melbourne, because I'm going to talk about Melbourne today. He was born on the 15th of March in London and was UK Prime Minister from 1835 to 1841. And was part of the Whig evangelical wing. Now, the evangelicals in 1835 were proclaiming their vision in the joyful aftermath of their greatest victory, the outlawing of slavery across the British Empire in 1833, which was a political achievement.
Mark, we're really struggling to hear you, I have to tell you.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, no, there's too much crackle and this story is far too interesting.
All right, well, look, let's put it off till next time then, shall we?
Yeah, I think we better because it's...
It's just not working. Okay, well, look,
I'm sorry to hear that because we do miss having you on the show. It's always wonderful to have you in
here. Okay, well, I'll be back next week.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark.
I've got plenty to say, by the way, Mark, about Lord Melbourne.
Have you?
Oh, me too. Yeah, he loved spanking. That was the thing. But we'll get on to that next week.
And his wife was a Byron fucker.
Are you allowed to say that on the show, John?
Well, she called Byron mad, bad, and dangerous to know. All right, well, look, we'll get into that next week.
Fabulous, Mark. Thanks
a
lot.
Bye, John.
Yes, that was very... There he goes. Yes, that was. I think that was a little too difficult to hear.
Yeah.
So...
But we will hear about it, no doubt.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
and next week also we're going to, Mark and I and yourself, will be talking about Vincent.
Vincent, that's right. Yeah. Now, On the subject of Cairo, there is a rather fabulous phenomenon that's just occurred quite recently. There's a young couple, or reasonably young couple, in their early 30s, I think, travelled to Cairo and decided that they would make a little video while they were there of their travels on their iPhones, which they did, and they pieced together all their adventures around to the Bangles song Walk Like an Egyptian. Oh, anyway, it's hilarious. It's very, very good. They've put it up on YouTube and it's garnered so many likes from people all around the world that these people have actually been, the Egyptian Tourist Authority have contacted them and paid for them to come back to Cairo. They've made them, they are superstars apparently in Cairo and doing all sorts of other filming, all on the back of this lovely little video, which is really charming that they've made.
Owners of the song are getting appropriately rewarded.
I'm sure they would have to be. I don't think that the Egyptian Tourist Authority could, purloin their work without... Brody's waving his hands. Perhaps they have. Maybe I've dropped them in it. Who knows?
Mm. I wonder who owns the song.
Well, it'd have to be the Bangles, wouldn't it?
No, I think the...
Record company.
Yeah, I don't think the Bangles. Did they release that song, or had someone done it previously?
Walk Like an Egyptian. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I have always assumed that they wrote that song.
Oh, okay.
That's a bit of research we better look up.
It's one of the stupidest songs I've ever heard.
Yeah, I know. It's very catchy, though. Mm. And perhaps we ought to play it. In fact, why don't we play it here and give ourselves a little moment to regroup because we haven't got Mark. And we'll come back in a minute, probably with the news, I think. Well, it's time for the news, of course.
You know the typewriter track?
Yeah.
Did you actually record Will on the typewriter?
Well, no, it's more the sentiment of Will on the typewriter. Okay. Hey, Matthew Fagan and Isaac Muslavius are on at St. John's Church this afternoon.
You've been practicing, Sally?
Yeah, I've said it a couple of times. They're on at St. John's Church in Flinders tonight. Go to Matthew's website for tickets, which is Matthew-Fagan.com.
Vincent's on at the NGV, and we'll be talking about that and... the crowds will be going to see it. He's an extremely popular artist, and one has to fathom the reasons why.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it, why that might be. But he most certainly is. It's mass appeal, isn't it?
Well, it might be partly the backstory. You know, that people feel a bit sort of sorry about his lack of success during his life or something.
Yes, but also that it was such good groundbreaking imagery.
It is a good backstory. It's kind of an interesting one.
Corinderk, I should say, presented by the Ilbajeri Theatre Company, is on at Frankston Arts Centre on Saturday, the 20th of May.
The Dark Mofo program's out, Sally.
Yes, yes.
Are you going this year?
I think so. I think I should. It's very, very dark. I haven't decided what to go see yet, though.
Right.
I know I normally would be leaping at it, but I am planning something a little bit later.
Don't they sponsor you down there?
Hopefully they might, yes. Mm. Yes, I better get my story into my... pull my finger out, as we say. Okay, the Dionysus Theatre are having another piece of theatre coming up, also at the Frankston Arts Centre, on May the 13th. This time it is Arete Gamma, in which there are four one-act plays that attempt to wrestle with Carl Sagan's theme. Sagan, do you say Sagan or Sagan? Sagan's theme. Science is a way of thinking much more than it is a body of work. So we'll try and find out a little bit more about that for next week.
Science is a way of thinking. Like that?
Yeah.
Great new exhibitions coming up at the MPRG.
Yes. Oh, I meant to say to you, I met the new curator. Well, he's been there for a little while now, Danny Lacey, during the week. And he seems like a very interesting fellow. And he's very keen to come in and talk to us about the new program that's coming up during the year. So let's hope we hear a little bit more from the Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery.
Good.
Yes, it does indeed.
Yeah. I'd like to know as well.
Yeah. Music on the Hill, bringing in a Skyscraper Stan and the Commission Flats, who are a hazy, sweat-soaked dream of sunburnt country towns. That's what they play. So go to the Red Hill Pavilion on Friday, the 5th of May, or go to musiconthehill.com.au for tickets.
I love those towns, those hazy, sun-drenched towns.
Yes, absolutely.
You know the ones in northern Victoria that are on one side of the railway track? And
yes,
the wheat silos are on the other side.
Yeah, one, love that. Love that sort of central outback Australia. Okay then, well, if you've just tuned in, you've missed Arts About. You can catch up with the show via podcast, which should appear on the station website very soon. The show also repeats on air and streaming Wednesdays at 12. You can find a link to our Facebook page, and I'll try and put links up for all of those things we've talked about today on the RPP website. Join us again 11 a.m. Sunday, and remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art.
But who knows what Mark.
No, we don't know. We didn't get to hear
it. Not here.
No.